There are many definitions for what is sustainable, and most all of them would seem to be good, but what if one of them, the one that really counts, means sustained control? That definition would lead us to ask, who would want to sustain control over us?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1214th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Yokohama who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, in agriculture, this ongoing war of words, the potency of the word weapons comes and goes. Consider, for example, the word organic. At one time, organic was the word small family-scale farms used to defend themselves against the predation of large industrial-scale farms. When organic foods began showing up on the shelves of big box stores, the small family-scale farms turned to another word to protect themselves from the big ones. That word, sustainable. We grow food in ways that sustain the environment, they said, while they grow food in ways that harm the environment. The word sustainable proved to be an especially potent weapon. After all, we do want to sustain the environment for those who follow. And so sustainable became a battle cry in agriculture's ongoing war on words. But if one were to go searching for what the word sustainable actually means, one would find more than 600 definitions. While most all of them would seem to be protective of the future, we ran across a definition in a transcript of a speech given to the Colorado Independent Cattlemen's Association, in which sustainable was said to mean sustain control, sustain power. And that definition leads us to ask, who would want to sustain control over us? To find an answer, we turn to the man who gave the speech, Tom DeWeese, president of the American Policy Center and author of Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals. Tom, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Well, here we are. Given the subject of your speech and the title of your book, I would suspect that you're not a card-carrying member of Greenpeace.
That would be correct. And I don't think they would have me.
What exactly do you mean when you hold up the word sustainable? Like I said, roughly 600 definitions of the word sustainable if you go searching. What do you mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I look at my old Webster's dictionaries, which aren't around much anymore.
I have one.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I have one.
But, you know, they talk about sustainable. For example, the timber industry is probably one of the best examples of sustainable, because if they did what they're accused of, which is clear-cutting all the forest, they'd be out of business in 5 years. Instead, as they collect their crop of trees, which is what it is, then they also plant new ones so that they have something in the future that's sustainable. Our ranchers, our cattlemen, using the land over and over again for generations, you know, have been able to do that and prosper from it. That is sustainable. But what we have here, back in the late 80s, early 90s, you had a movement. There is a very radical environmental movement in this world, and I think we can all agree to that, that they have some very radical positions. Well, and the United Nations began to have a series of meetings, discussing policies for the future and so forth. 1987, they had the United Nations World Commission on Environment and Development. And they, basically, this is where the word sustainable development came from in there. And what they began to do is make all kinds of rules and regulations about how we could farm, how we could use the environment, how we could use, you know, natural resources. And one of the things this was based on, back in the late 80s, there was an organization called Earth First. And the organization, the head of it was a gentleman named Dave Foreman. Dave Foreman created the Wildlands Project. And he said, as he put this together, my three main goals would be to reduce human populations to about 100 million worldwide, destroy the industrial infrastructure, and see wilderness with its full complement of species returning throughout the world. Now, that became, you know, some people say, well, that's just the ravings of a lunatic. Well, actually, it became the basis for the UN's biodiversity treaty and its whole program. And this began to set in motion a series of rules and regulations over our farmlands, over our, you know, the people who grow the crops and so forth. And what he, one of the things he talked about was rewilding 50% of all the land in every single state back to the way it was before Christopher Columbus. And what that means is, and we said this at the time, what they really are intending to do is herd people off of the rural lands and into the cities. And people say, well, how would you do that? Well, the answer to that is you make it impossible to live there. How do you do that? You begin to control the water. You begin to control the land. You begin to control how everything is done to the point where people can no longer earn a living there, cannot live there, and they leave. And this is what we're seeing happen. And this is all under the term sustainable development.
So when you tell somebody, you know, that, you know, they look at you and say, we need to have sustainable agriculture, you say what?
I say that we've had sustainable agriculture. The, you know, the farmers that we have in America, the cattlemen, others have had the highest quality standards of product in the world. They always have had. If they didn't, they would be out of business. If they had abused the land, if they had damaged everything and just left it in some kind of a mess, then they would be out of business. In order for them to be in business, they have to take care of the land, and that's exactly what they have done.
And if they had not taken care of the land, their land would not be sustaining them anyway. So there it is. But it's a different kind of word sustainable, isn't it? There really is a different meaning in this word that they're holding up and saying we must be sustainable. What is it that they're really looking for?
It's a political agenda. And, you know, it won't make a lot of sense to a lot of people. It doesn't make sense to me and exactly what they want to do. But it is, as I said, it is an agenda of control. They want to get people off the rural lands. This is about control. It is not about environmental protection. If you look at so many of the programs that they say are environmentally safe and are to protect the environment, you find out that they actually are more damaging to the environment than what they're supposedly trying to correct. For example, when I first started working in these policies, and I would do radio interviews and so forth, there would always be an environmentalist who would call in and he'd say, you're just a member of the AstroTurf crowd. You want to pave the earth. That's what I was accused of. Well, in fact, and even at that time, this was in the 1990s when it started, I was told by some energy experts at that time, if you wanted to use wind power simply to make up the shortage of electricity in California at that time, you would need an area the size of Connecticut. You would need to have all of this infrastructure, the cement, the wires, everything, to, you know, the size of Connecticut. That was just for the shortage in California at the time. So now, if you want to transfer everything to wind and solar, just imagine what our country would look like under all of that. They're even talking about taking it out into the oceans and so forth. What you wouldn't see is anything flying in the air. And, you know, who wants to pave the earth? I want to have a power plant that takes up a couple of acres and covers everybody. They want to have this massive wind power and so forth that doesn't produce enough power and would take over all that land. But this is what they call environmentally correct. This is what they call sustainable. And it makes absolutely no sense for protecting the environment.
Okay, and let's back up a little bit to the 1987 UN World Commission. And out of that came something called Agenda 21, which is a comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society. Really?
That's how they described it. That they said this is a comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society, and one of the main tenets of that was that we have to reduce the population. Now, I've heard all kinds of numbers that we needed to reduce it to. Dave Foreman said 100,000.
100,000 people?
It was 100 million, I think he said. Yeah, 100 million. And basically they've settled on a billion out of most voices out of the UN on these things.
Okay. And that's around the world or just
yes.
here?
Around
the world?
Around the world, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And
that's a lot of people you got to get rid of.
Absolutely, and I've said many, many times to environmentalists, you get in line first, we'll all follow you. I haven't had any takers yet.
This is actually part of the Agenda 21 is to reduce the population?
Yeah, it's a major piece of it. And I haven't spent a lot of time on it over the years as I've fought Agenda 21 for the last 27 years, but I'm now seeing more and more policies being put in place that lead to that. And we're seeing attacks on healthcare, and we're seeing, I don't want to get into all these other different issues, but see a big drive now for abortion and many other things. And all of this is really aimed at reducing the population. And what they point to, they'll look at countries like India and China and so forth that have teeming poverty and massive populations. Well, in reality, when you look at those countries, what you see in place are some of the very same policies that they're advocating for the whole world that don't work, that create that teeming poverty. One of those is private property ownership. We hear all of these policies to reduce population, to reduce poverty, and what we're looking at here is redistribution of wealth. It's one of the tenets of it. And so, taking it out of this person's pocket to put it in that person so they can survive another day. Now we need some more. Now we need some more. Now we need some more. Pretty soon what we end up with is more poverty and more poor people. An economist out of Peru, his name's Hernando de Soto, and he wrote a book about free enterprise capitalism, private property, how it would eliminate poverty. That this was the only real way to eliminate poverty, because land ownership, being able to have equity in your land. A lot of people don't understand how the United States became one of the wealthiest nations in the world so rapidly. We went rolling past ancient cultures and ancient countries. And the reason was that people had the ability to own their own land and benefit from it. 60% of the businesses in America were started by people using the equity in their private property, and that employed over 60% of the American people. I don't think that's true today, but it was in the beginning, and this is how we built wealth. But people in other countries who aren't allowed to own private property have no ability to build that wealth.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we're talking about sustainable development with Tom Weiss, president of the American Policy Center, author of Sustainable, The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuals. Going to take a quick break, but we're going to come. When we come back, we want to learn just exactly how the UN intends to reorganize human society? Right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, they call it they call this Agenda 21, Comprehensive Blueprint for the Reorganization of Human Society. Now, how on earth are you going to do that? How are you going to get a bunch of people like you and I to reorganize ourselves? I would like to even be organized. I don't know how I'm going to be or reorganized. So the secret seems to be in environmentalism. Why is that, Tom?
Well, you know, the reason that they have chosen the environmentalism as the tool to do this is because the environment doesn't recognize political boundaries. Rivers, run through many states, and you've got the crops and so forth that grow in different corridors and so forth, and the paths of wildlife and all that. So that means that when you have that national border, your national sovereignty, well, know that we've got these corridors and so forth that run in different places to protect the environment. We can't recognize those borders. Now you come down to the border of your state and the border of your county. Now we have they're organizing multiple counties into one size fits all situations with rules and regulations, all because we're going to protect the environment. Well, that comes right down to the boundary around your home. Used to be your private property was sacred, that you had no trespassing signs up, cross that line and suffer the consequences. This is mine. Today, that is out the door, and one of the things we have happening in communities is city employees or whatever are coming onto private property. They're mapping it. They're measuring things, and they're making rules and regulations. The farmers are feeling this especially, controls over their water and that sort of thing. Well, we're just protecting the environment. And so that becomes the most usable excuse. Well, what we've had as this has gone along, they're using the environment as a scare tactic to get us to voluntarily give up our liberties. And I've had it said to me many times, it doesn't matter how many rights you think you have if you don't have a planet to stand on. So that becomes the scare tactic. Now, if you doubt that, let me share this quote with you. I've got many of these. Christina Stewart, who was a former Canadian Minister of the Environment, she said, "No matter if the science of global warming is all phony, climate change provides the greatest opportunity to bring about justice and equality in the world." Now, think about that. We're supposedly talking about protecting the environment, but all of a sudden we're talking about a justice system and equality.
Just a minute. What on earth is justice and equality?
Exactly. Well, you now hear the term social justice has popped up. Now, we used to have courts of law and justice in there, and our founding fathers went to great lengths to make sure that our justice system was fair to everyone. All of a sudden, we have this cry of social justice, and everything is based on emotions. I don't like it. Please don't say that. I don't agree with that. And it becomes a lynch mob. That you look at something and well, I just don't like the way that's done. I don't like the way you look. I don't like what you say. That's a social injustice. And so this has become the moral guideline of what we're dealing with. And it has nothing to do with law and equality and so forth.
Well, who are the warriors of sustainability? As we're putting it on the table today, which is essentially control. Who are the warriors of sustainable control? Is it sustained control?
I think that's probably more correct.
Sustained control.
And that's what they want to do, is sustain that control as well. What you have happened is Agenda 21 was put in place, and as I said, there were many, many different meetings that were leading up to it. They had these habitat conferences, many other conferences where they put treaties together and so forth. These were actually written by non-governmental organizations. These would include the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, the World Wildlife Fund, the actually Planned Parenthood is an NGO. NGOs are they're not just nonprofit organizations. They are officially sanctioned by the United Nations. It's actually mentioned in their charters, NGOs. They call them civil society. And so these organizations are in the back rooms with their own private agendas.
Are they not kind of above and beyond governments then? I mean, it's almost like the United Nations is a membership organization of governments, but then there's these NGOs that are also part of the United Nations and that are not part of the government.
Yeah. What they would like to do, and when they talk about reforming the United Nations, you got to be careful what they mean by that, because one of the great thorns in the side of the UN is the Security Council, because any member of the Security Council can veto anything with just one vote, and that gets in their way. What they want to do is eliminate the Security Council and replace it with an Assembly of the People. And that Assembly of the People will be the NGO organization, civil society. And I'm often asking people, well, did you pay your dues to the Sierra Club this month? This is who they say is going to represent us. Now, what happens here, and this is what took place after Agenda 21, they will tell you, and you will, if you look this up on the Internet and stuff, you'll see all kinds of reports, a lot of them attacking me about this. But what they'll be saying is Agenda 21 was just a voluntary suggestion of here are some good ideas that we think would help the environment, would help around the world, and if a country wants to do this, then, you know, here they are. Here's the suggestions. Well, that all went out the window in 1992 is when Agenda 21 was introduced at the Rio Summit in Rio de Janeiro, the Earth Summit. In 1993, Bill Clinton became president. He issued an executive order to create the President's Council on Sustainable Development. And the purpose of this council was to take those suggestions of Agenda 21 and make them official policy. And on that council were, of course, representatives of about every federal agency, and representatives of many of the NGO organizations that helped write Agenda 21 at the UN level, including the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, and so forth, and also representatives of global corporations. And they put together a series of policies and so forth. The NGOs helped with the agencies writing grant programs. The grant programs that then became, they went into the cities and so forth. What happened was, first of all, the NGOs, after they did this, they went into the states and they lobbied there to get the states to pass regulations that say every community needs to do a comprehensive blueprint for their development in their community. Then they went into the communities, and here are city councils and so forth saying, what the heck's a comprehensive blueprint? And they go, oh, don't worry about it. We got it all right here in a box for you. Got the money for you, too. The grants that they wrote had the small print in them that when you follow to comply with that grant, you were literally imposing Agenda 21. This includes international codes for building, international plumbing codes, international electric codes, and so forth. International, who wrote those? What does that have to do with our community here? But this is what is in these documents and these grants. And step by step, this is how they put it in place. And this is how it's gotten into your own backyard. And, you know, your community now, try to start a small business in your community and see what you're up against. Well, why is that difficult? Well, we have public-private partnerships between global corporations and government. and we're told, oh, this is bringing free enterprise and those ideas into government and keeping government small. No, it's not. This is giving these corporations the power of government. They help make the rules and regulations, and what they ended up doing was using that to help put their competition out of business.
Just,
and this is one reason it's so hard to start a small business.
It's just the same thing, then, that happened with the word organic.
Mm-hmm.
Once the small farmers gave the word organic to the federal government, those who had the economies of scale sufficient to have an impact on the federal government moved right in and changed the whole world of organic, and now you can grow organic food and water, which is very suitable for those who have the industrial scale, but not so much for the small farmers. And as I listen to you, I see the same thing developing with respect on the line between city people and country people, between those of us who live in apartments in the city and those who work the land. And, you know, I'm wondering, what exactly did you tell the Colorado's independent cattlemen in your speech to them with respect to sustainable? I mean, you stood up there in front of all of these cattlemen, some of them in boots, you know, was probably still covered in cow pies, and you told them something. What did you tell them?
Well, actually, that was earlier. I just came back from New Mexico speaking to another group of cattlemen there. And one of the gentlemen in the audience asked me a question when I was finished, and he said, can you give us a good definition of sustainable so when we talk with these people, we have something to speak on? I said, stop using the word. It is their word. It is their game. And the minute you start using their terms, they control the game here. And I said, understand the game that's being played here. You are not supposed to win. And, they are maneuvering you into doing what, you know, really the bottom line here is they're going to put them out of business. That's the goal. And we're now
Wait a minute. The goal is what?
Is to put the cattle industry out of business. This is, it's said over and over again. The World Wildlife Fund has managed to take control of the American beef industry. This is an organization that has said, in order to save the planet, we have got to stop beef consumption. And this is a very clever plan that they're doing here. First of all, they start saying, well, we just need to make it more sustainable. They create the crisis that our beef growing isn't sustainable. And so we have a bunch of rules and regulations. This will help you improve your industry. But when you have an organization that has already stated our goal is to get rid of the beef industry, one of the things they say, there's several things that they talk about. They accuse the industry of deforestation because it takes a whole lot more land for grazing of cattle than if we were just going to grow food crops like soy and wheat. That's one of their premises. And so we can feed many more people with just soy and wheat. Well, what they call that is a vegan diet. Well, if you're promoting a vegan diet, you're not promoting beef consumption, and that's one of the things they talk about. They talk about energy consumption. They say that for a steak to end up on your plate, that the cow has to consume massive amounts of energy along the way, and then you have to transport them to get the market and all that sort of thing. And so they blame energy consumption. Well, you know, if you get really deep into this whole sustainable issue and look at, they have maps of communities, of what the perfect sustainable community would be. The perfect sustainable community would be totally self-sufficient. You wouldn't ship anything in there. Every need you have in that city would be created in that city. All your food, all of your energy, and so forth. This is their vision of a perfect community, a sustainable community. Well, that means there's no shipping of anything. And, you know, if you like bananas, kiss them goodbye if they don't grow in your community. And, this is how they view it. The reason for this is They talk about, you know, as I mentioned earlier, global warming, climate change is the driving force here. Well, they say that in getting people into the cities, they can control energy consumption. They can control, you know, get us out of our cars and just have us riding bikes.
And they can control what we eat.
Exactly.
And they can control what we eat. Now, you talk about how they're setting up a certification, a sustainable certification of some kind for the beef industry, and all of the all that ranchers have to do is comply with these simple rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, these simple rules and regulations, it's just amazing what some of these include. First of all, when Agenda 21 came out, they had a logo that they still use this. You may see it in different documents. It's three connecting circles, and each circle is labeled. One is labeled ecological integrity. That's the environment. One is economic prosperity. That's his public-private partnerships I was talking about. And one is social equity, and as we've discussed on all these things. Those three things together encompass every aspect of our lives. Well, it's interesting because I've got a document here called the Principles for Sustainable Beef Farming, and this is from the Sustainable Beef Farming Working Group, and it's very interesting as they start to describe this.
Can you hold on? We're going to take a quick break and pick that up when we come back, because I don't want to get caught in the middle of them. It sounds too exciting. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Tom DeWeese, President of the American Policy Center. We're talking about sustainable development and the impact sustainable development might have on our food and our food chain and our ability to eat the foods we want to eat. And our ability to move freely about our earth as we have done for so long. Right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, I'm thinking it could be pretty frightening if you were trying to comply with the rules of sustainability as a cattle rancher in the great west of our nation. What are some of the rules that they have to follow, Tom?
Well, as I said just before the break, these three connecting circles, we call the three E's, social equity, ecological integrity, and economic prosperity. Well, as I go through this document that describes the principles for sustainable beef, it's interesting that it's broken down into three parts: economic sustainability, social sustainability, and environmental sustainability. And as you begin to look at this, the social sustainability chapter on this document for sustainable beef asks these questions. Is the health of both consumers and the general public protected? Is cattle health and welfare safeguarded? Is the breed of cattle and choice of production system suited to the local climate, the soil, the pests, and the diseases? On and on and on. And I love this one. Are all workers sufficiently competent? You know, this is the rules and regulations that they have come up with. They've created the global sustainable roundtable. And this roundtable is what's putting all these things in place. And in order to bring your beef to the market, they have to be sustainably certified following these kinds of regulations.
Wow.
And you have to ask, decided by whom? How is it produced? And one of the things they call for is taking your rangelands where you need to grow the beef, and taking a portion of that and leaving it for the wildlands so that wild animals have that space to roam.
That's the wilding.
This is a move to get you off the rangeland.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the beef industry is now controlled by essentially four different packers. So if you're a rancher, You grow out your cows and you take them to processing plant, but they're controlled by four different organizations. So you have to go through that or you can't sell your beef.
Exactly. The cattlemen themselves don't have a market. Mm-hmm. And so it's controlled by Tyson's, the JBS is another one. That's actually out of Brazil. And Cargill is another one. And one is, I think it's National Beef, as it's called.
Right.
And they all are part of this round table. They are all sitting there at this table with the World Wildlife Fund calling the shots. And I asked some people, there's an organization called RCAF, and a gentleman named Bill Bullard who heads that up. They are trying to fight these things. They have filed some suits. They've had some successes. And they're the voice trying to stand up against this. And I asked Bill, I said, why would the cattlemen go along with this? And he said, you know, for decades they have been assaulted by the radical environmentalists and by the animal rights organizations and so forth. They're just trying to do their job. They just want to grow the food, what their families have always done, and they want to be left alone. And they just said, okay, put this word sustainable in there. It's a pressure valve. Get them off our back. We can deal with that. And what I'm trying to explain to them is you will not win that fight because there is a political agenda here. One of the things, going back to the Wildlands Project, the World Wildlife Fund is one of the organizations pushing to, they want to take control of all of the prairie lands, the lands out there, and get the people off of them and get the cattle off and so forth. What's really amazing about it is they want to bring back the buffalo. And, so fine, but they talk about how the cattle destroy the land, but the cattle and the buffalo, what's the difference between them organically, you know?
A ton. About a ton.
Well, maybe, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and
right.
They're still eating the same grass and everything. And one of the things they talk about is converting the grazing lands to growing wheat and soy. Well, the fact of the matter is that I've studied this, and I found that in most cases you can't convert that land over.
Two different kinds
it
of worlds.
Work.
Yeah,
exactly.
Two different kinds
yeah.
of worlds.
Well, it's, and I've joked many times if the environmentalists would come out of their high rises in New York City and actually touch the ground, they might understand some of this stuff. The farmers do.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to.
Yeah.
So they seem to have the world of agriculture under control, sustain control, because if you control the water that falls on a farmer's land, you pretty much control that land. If you control what kind of employee that they can put out in the pasture, then you're pretty much in control. If you establish all of these rules under the rubric of sustainability, you sustain control. Now that environmental world has sustained control over agriculture, or it seems to be pretty darn close to having that control, what does that mean for we city people? I'm thinking impossible burgers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the one thing they're really pushing, and what, of course, they made of soy and wheat and, greens, that kind of thing. No beef in them.
I think 30 different things or something ungodly?
Yeah, it's a chemical mix, and we're told, oh, this is good for us. Yeah. And that definitely is the push they're making. And I think the article you're talking about, I put that out as a speech out as an article, and the main organization in the cattle industry, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, this is the biggest one in the country. This kind of oversees everything. And they have been working directly with the World Wildlife Fund and this Sustainable Beef Roundtable and putting all this in place. And they actually responded to my article in the most pathetic whine I've ever heard in my life. And what they said was that, well, it's difficult to accept that outsiders have influence in how we're doing business, and increasingly though, that's exactly what's happening, that in the case of sustainability, consumers have decided that they ought to have a better understanding and perhaps even a say in how their food is produced. Now, this is why they say they're at the table. That what we had to do, they said, was get a place at the table so we could represent the cattle industry and tell our side. Well, you see, it's the environmentalist table. They control everything. Now they've had their seat at the table for the last 10 years.
So what you say is that the environmental community owns the word sustainable.
Yes, it's their word.
And so when you sit at their sustainable table, you have no say.
Exactly. And the fellow who wrote this article for the NCBA said, to make certain that the voice of the cattlemen and women is heard in conversations about cattle and beef production, you know, that's why we're there. We got a place at the table. And I asked the audience, I said, how's that working for you? You got that voice there. You know, they have been subjected to all of these rules and regulations we're talking about here, making it impossible. Hundreds and hundreds of cattlemen have gone out of business because of this. And as you were mentioning with the organic thing, what has taken place here is, you watch advertising and so forth from groups like the World Wildlife Fund, and they will show these horrible conditions of factory farms, you know, chickens that never touch the ground and, you know, lots of pollution and all that kind of thing. But in reality, what is happening here is the small farmer, the small cattleman, is being put out of business, and everything is being herded by the World Wildlife Fund and all their policies to the factory farms. And in fact, even the packers, unbeknownst to themselves, they have been duped too, thinking they're going to make more money this way because they are now bringing in foreign beef that is not under all these rules. It's cheaper. And they're cutting out American farmers and cattlemen, and they're using this foreign stuff. And what you're hearing now are reports that are coming out about tainted beef or tainted chicken, whatever the case may be. And that works in their favor, too, because that gets people afraid to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And that works that way. But the packers, unfortunately, don't understand that they have signed their own death warrants as well, because ultimately the goal is to end these industries.
And it would appear as they're making some significant inroads in that respect. I'm thinking of country of origin labeling and how they got rid of country of origin labeling. And that now means that the beef that was grown on the greasy grass of Montana's prairies is equal to who knows what.
Yep.
They bring in from anywhere. It could be, you know, beef from Egypt. Who knows?
Yeah. Namibia is one of the places we're getting it from, and different other countries. And what they have managed to do, these packers, is play a game. They bring the beef from one of those countries, but they process it here, and then they say, oh, this is American beef. And they're playing that game.
Sure.
Now, ranchers have stood up on this and demanded that this country of origin labeling be put back on. And the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, talk about wimps. They have mumbled around, well, I don't know, we could make it voluntary. Yeah, right. That's exactly what we have now. And that's not going to solve the problem. So what I, you know, have been telling the cattle industry, and they're looking at me with kind of a nervous little smile on their face, but I'm pushing it. What they have to do is get past all of this. Going to legislatures and lawsuits and so forth are important to do, but they cannot win this fight without getting to the consumers. And they're always telling me all of these details, and I say to them, you know that, but the consumer doesn't. You need to tell that message to the consumers. You've got to leap over that table and get out to the consumers and get them angry, get them behind you. And so what I have advocated that they do is have a cattle drive right straight down Main Street in the capital cities of five different cities on the same day at exactly the same time, going to the Capitol and handing, as people get their, they get their attention, handing out leaflets, telling their story, and then having a news conference at the State House and tell what their situation is. I said, you will get international coverage if you do this. You will leap right over all these forces. And as an example,
you sound like Dave Foreman. And
I want action.
But what you're saying rings true. It seems as though the environmental community has used the word sustainable to split the communities of agriculture and cities.
Absolutely.
They've driven the cattle drive right between us.
Mm-hmm.
And,
exactly.
And they want to use the city people to shut down agriculture. And then once agriculture can no longer produce, they're going to force city people to eat Impossible Burgers.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, what the reason I brought up that example, if you're watching what's happening in Europe, first of all, in the Netherlands, farmers who are facing some of the very same policies literally shut that country down, all of their highways, with their tractors.
Yeah.
And immediately the government said, we need to have a meeting. They did it twice. Then it went to Dublin, Ireland. Then it went to
France.
Berlin, Germany, and just last week in Paris, France. This is what I'm trying to tell them. They've got to do something dramatic. That the cowboys of old that I grew up with, spirit of them, was that they wouldn't demand to sit at the table and cry for their rights. They would go in and kick the table over and say, get out. And this is what we have to do. We've got to fight back and stand up to these people, because all of their lies, all of the stuff they say is sustainable, is damaging to us. And people wonder how you take a nation, take Venezuela for example, in a matter of 5 or 6 years, goes from being a wealthy nation to being,
one of the most wealthy nations in the world in terms of its resources, but it's broke.
But it's all shut off. And this is how that happens. And we're witnessing it happen here in a classic mode.
Well, let me ask you, Tom DeWeese, do you think the environmental community really is focused on in the environment, or is it focused on control? Which it seems like what you're saying is that control is the real definition of sustainable.
I believe that they have membership that are dedicated to protecting the environment, but the leadership and the purpose of their mission and so forth, and they said it over and over again, is not about environmental protection. It is about creating global governance and total control from the top.
And there it is.
There's such a cynicism in them and hypocrisy as they use this. But the environment became, I've said this many times, there's always been a force that wanted to rule the world.
And usually
what they did was
there
they brought
it is.
In.
I just ran out of time, but the force that wants to rule the world. He is Tom DeWeese, president of the American Policy Center, and I am Michael Olson, and we want to thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.